Mr. Balance, and welcome to Balance 2. Thanks for joining us. I pray you continue to support our endeavors while we take this journey together during these very troubled times. So, despite all the craziness going on in the world, we want to be your respite, your place to decompress, relax, reflect, and acknowledge.
The modern economy is really defined by this extraordinary concentration of wealth and the power that goes with it, all held by a very small number of global figures, what some people call the billionaire class. We see evidence all the time that this power structure leads to, well, some pretty destructive societal and economic consequences. The question of why this happens, though, is still very much open for debate.
Right, and that's what we want to get into. Is the harm primarily a function of the inherent psychological profile of these individual leaders, you know, a kind of advanced, maybe even clinical narcissism, or is it something else?
Exactly. Is it the inevitable result of the unregulated systemic power they wield, the monopolies, the control over data, the political capture that just produces these outcomes, really regardless of who is sitting in the CEO chair? So I'm going to be making the case that the structural and systemic environment is, at its heart, the root cause. It creates the legal and economic imperatives that either force or enable this destructive behavior, often irrespective of the individuals involved.
And I'm going to push back on that a bit. I'll be arguing that you can't ignore the specific psychological traits, the documented entitlement, the grandiosity, and frankly, a dangerous lack of empathy. I think these are the essential primary drivers that dictate how and why those powerful tools are deployed towards such harmful ends.
Okay. Well, when we look at the rise of the modern titans, especially in big tech, the scale of the problem feels overwhelmingly structural and economic. These firms aren't just successful businesses. They're driven by network effects that create what are functionally natural monopolies. When the value of a service just increases exponentially with the number of users, you know, think of a social platform or a search engine, competitors are just naturally squeezed out. These firms then profit spectacularly from commodifying data, what's often called the oil of the information age. This structural size alone gives them the economic leverage to either absorb or just crush any competitors that threaten them.
Right.
And critically, the legal framework didn't just allow this to happen. It actively supported it over the last 40 years. There was a major shift in antitrust policy, influenced heavily by the work of Robert Bork, which narrowed the entire regulatory focus down to just one thing, consumer pricing. So if a company could deliver a cheap product to your door, the government essentially ignored the massive control it was accumulating over suppliers, labor, the whole economy. That narrow focus provided the precise legal rationale for unimpeded global dominance. And this power is then cemented by political influence. Big tech now competes with Wall Street as a top spender on lobbying, which lets them legally sidestep regulations through, you know, complex things like tax offshoring. The power structure is the key engine of harm here.
Okay, I see why you foreground the structure. I mean, it obviously provides the stage, but I really come at it from a different angle, one that's more rooted in, well, human psychology and leadership studies. The structure to me is just an inert framework until a specific type of personality takes the helm and decides to exploit its maximal potential. And research strongly suggests that the specific strategies we see are direct results of the narcissistic personality type that so successfully rises to the top of these organizations.
Mm-hmm.
Narcissistic CEOs, they're driven by this almost pathological need for admiration, for validation, for superiority, and they pursue what researchers consistently call grandiose and attention-getting initiatives. These personality traits correlate directly with greater strategic dynamism, aggressive acquisition behavior, the big M&A moves, and critically, more extreme and volatile company performance. They want massive, visible wins, and they are perfectly willing to court massive systemic losses to get them. And what's more, the entitlement inherent in this mindset gives them the moral justification they need for exploitation. They literally see the company and their self-image as synonymous, believing they fully deserve all the benefits and privileges bestowed upon them because they see themselves as operating on a higher plane. This is made worse by evidence that power itself actually correlates with a measurable loss of empathy. Leaders, neurologically, they stop mimicking others, leading to this profound disconnection from the needs and suffering of people below them. And that lack of empathy is the essential precondition that enables truly callous exploitation, like the knowing use of persuasive technologies designed to manipulate teenagers for profit. They just don't care about the consequences for other people.
So that brings us right to the core issue of exploitation in this attention economy.
Exactly. My position is that the old greed is good ethos, when it's overlaid with this deep, almost contemptuous disdain for civic society, this view that the demos is just, you know, in the way, that's what dictates these specific aggressive acts of harm. These aren't just passive business decisions. They are reflections of individual values that prioritize achievement and power over things like, well, universalism or benevolence. And we have explicit testimony on this. You just have to look at the comments from Facebook's founding president, Sean Parker. He didn't just stumble into success. He admitted that the platform's architects intentionally exploited a vulnerability in human psychology to create addiction for profit. He detailed designing the system to provide a dopamine hit every time someone gets a like or a comment. That is a clear ego-driven, intentional act of psychological manipulation. The structure just provided the platform. The narcissistic mind provided the blueprint for maximum exploitation.
Okay, but is it ego-driven or is it business model-driven? I mean, that's a compelling point, but I think I'd frame it a little differently. I grant you that the exploitation of attention and psychology is central, but the pursuit of that addiction is structurally enforced by the business model itself. Monetizing attention isn't really a choice for these companies. It is absolutely paramount to their economic survival within that competitive framework you mentioned.
So you're saying they have no choice?
I'm saying the incentives are overwhelmingly powerful. Former Google engineer Tristan Harris gave an essential counterpoint to this idea that it's all about ego-driven evil. He stated explicitly that nobody was trying to be evil, but that the system's goals, which are structurally optimized to consume as much of our time and conscious attention as possible, were just fundamentally misaligned with the user's actual goals. The structural design forces the hand. We saw this demonstrated when YouTube dropped their quality algorithms, which were designed to increase content diversity. Why? Because those algorithms lowered watch time. The company wasn't choosing moral corruption. The design mandates profit and growth over any ethical concern, regardless of the individual values of the engineers or even the CEO who signed off on it. The system selects for maximized attention. And if that means leveraging a psychological vulnerability, well, the structure provides the imperative to do so.
Okay, even if we concede that the personal ego plays a role in how ruthlessly attention is extracted, we still have to ask, who holds this immense, concentrated power accountable?
Exactly. Let's pivot to that. The problem is that these entities are just too big to regulate. And that's primarily because of their organizational structures and how they've politically influenced the entire regulatory environment. Google's power, for instance, remains highly concentrated, and its top management has repeatedly shown a profound lack of self-awareness about external public perception, whether it's on privacy or political influence. This structural concentration is then amplified by the political power big tech wields. It's not just lobbying for tax breaks. It's actively influencing academic and public debate through massive institutional funding. This leads to what critics call social and intellectual capture. So when the institutions designed to oversee or critique them, from universities to think tanks, are dependent on their funding, the structural harm just continues unchecked because the necessary intellectual and legal countermeasures are stifled.
Right, they're stifled, but why are they stifled? I'm sorry, but I just don't buy that these systems are inherently unmanageable, absent the psychological drivers we're talking about. The institutional weakness you describe is exploited directly by the elite's favorite psychological defense mechanism, entitlement. I really do come at it from a different way. This sense of entitlement is what allows wealthy individuals to demand unequal justice. They use arguments of personal superiority or economic necessity, claiming they're too important as job creators to avoid arrest even when they commit crimes. They believe they're exempt from normal civic rules, and that belief is what actively drives this anti-competitive, anti-labor behavior. The growth over governance attitude, you know, epitomized by figures like Travis Kalanick at Uber, is psychologically rooted in this belief that they are exempt from the normal rules of contract and labor. That's the mindset that allowed Uber to actively drive anti-competitive practices while rewriting the contract between employees and labor into what we now recognize as a kind of modern neo-serfdom, where workers bear all the risk with none of the benefits. The institutional weakness isn't the cause, it's the vulnerability that the entitled, narcissistic mindset seeks out to exploit.
Okay, but does that mindset account for the full spectrum of harm?
Well, focusing back on the psychology, that narcissistic impulse for grandiosity is directly responsible for the risky and extreme flavor of harm we see, which is profoundly destabilizing. Research confirms a strong positive relationship between CEO narcissism and volatile company performance. The relentless drive to be the disruptor, to be seen as the singular genius who changed the world, it results in massive, often ill-advised actions. We're talking about the large attention-getting acquisitions, the unnecessary shifts in strategy, the speculative ventures that destabilize entire sectors and create massive economic uncertainty for thousands. It is that psychological need to be king that pushes the boundaries of risk into outright recklessness.
Recklessness, sure. And I'm not convinced that that kind of volatility, as, you know, attention-grabbing as it may be, really represents the greatest long-term societal harm. I'd argue the bigger damage is caused by something, well, something far quieter and more methodical, the structural rigging of the market. And this rigging systematically increases inequality, which is a massive long-term drag on economic growth.
What are you referring to specifically?
I'm talking about the widespread systematic use of stock buybacks, often using debt facilitated by decades of ultra-low interest rates. This isn't about a CEO taking a flashy risk. It's about leveraging the legal structure to extract value. Instead of investing in R&D or infrastructure or higher wages, companies borrow money, buy back their own stock, reduce the number of shares, and instantly inflate the stock price. This process disproportionately enriches the wealthiest shareholders, the top 10% who own the overwhelming majority of all stock, while saddling the company with debt. This systemic financial engineering is a function of legal loopholes and market rules championed by those who benefit, not necessarily the megalomania of any single CEO.
And this extraction mechanism, which increases the wealth divide and fuels political populism, causes far deeper, longer-lasting economic damage than, say, the episodic volatility from a narcissistic CEO's acquisition spree. The point remains that the structure dictates the mechanism of harm. I mean, the data overwhelmingly points to the market and political structures, the rise of these network effect monopolies, the failure of Borkian antitrust policy, and the intense political capture by lobbying as the primary mechanisms translating immense wealth into widespread societal harm.
The problem is systemic. Profits are dependent on monetizing attention and avoiding regulation. And that suggests that institutional and economic reform, reversing the narrow focus of antitrust, breaking up monopolies, addressing political capture, that's the necessary medicine, rather than just hoping for better character in our leaders. And while I fully acknowledge the role of structural deficiencies in, you know, providing the playing field and the financialized tools, the evidence connecting CEO narcissism to grandiose strategy, to exploitative practices, and to a profound loss of human empathy, it just can't be overlooked. The system provides the weapons, yes, but the specific, aggressive, and often abusive deployment of those weapons, from manipulating human psychology for addiction to knowingly creating neo-serfdom through platform control, that is dictated by the inherent self-absorption and entitlement of the individual elite leader. Psychology is the accelerant.
Ultimately, the sources really do suggest that economic performance, corruption, and the individual values of these economic agents are, well, they're intimately entangled, and they mutually reinforce each other. It points to a single toxic syndrome.
Yes, and the material leaves us with this critical, unresolved question.
Does society need to spend its energy curbing the destructive personality traits prevalent at the very top? Or must we focus on dismantling the structural monopolies and legal loopholes that amplify their destructive impact? The evidence really demands that we have to consider both.
That concludes today's show. Thank you for supporting Balanced Duo. We are a veteran-owned, tax-exempt nonprofit organization. Our message is inspiration, positivity, and spiritual guidance, all geared towards strengthening the community. For more info on upcoming events or podcasts, please visit our website at balancedu.org. And remember, we don't bend, we don't break, we keep it together for heaven's sake. So let's take this journey together, folks. And remember, God blesses those that bless others. Listen to advice and accept discipline. And at the end, you will be counted among the wise. Hope to see you soon. Peace.